are in Santa Cruz and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Back from the 30 to 50,000, who knows, people attending the Symbiosis Eclipse Retreat Festival, glorious ordeal combination. But yes, and that with co-emceeing with Amikayla Gaston, who sings that song for the last 22 years, because this week is the 22nd anniversary of the Visionary Activist Show, so how wonderful. And our theme, perfectly, is guiding political scientific strategy for a renaissance of reverent ingenuity. We are hosting Nick Brana, who is chief catalyst for the Draft Bernie Movement and Conference, which will be in Washington, D.C., September 8th through the 10th, draftbernie.org. And we will also be welcoming Rob Fanny, who joins us from Coyote Network News' actual in-person studio, also known as Robert Scribbler, among our most trustworthy climate crisis guides, robertscribbler.com, as we consider our effective response to catastrophe and what is the leadership and strategy we need now. So welcome, Nick Brana.
Hi, Rob. It's great to be here.
That's right. This is Caroline. I have a low voice. I know I'm a woman. That's perfectly fine. And there's Rob. Welcome, Nick. That's
great.
Nick. And welcome, Robert Scribbler. So yes, let's do wise leadership, scientific, political strategy. So absolutely, Nick. And we've hosted Josh Fox a number of times on this radio show, so you're in a welcoming venue. So you're certainly listening to a lot of dedicated, or you're speaking to a lot of dedicated teammates. Any way you want to go about, you know, saying you're a team of former Bernie staffers, delegates, super volunteers working to draft Bernie to a new People's Party. So you want to tell people about the conference September 8th through 10th that.
Absolutely. And I'll start off with a quick word about Draft Bernie, if you don't mind. And so we are, we're one of the organizers of the Convergence Conference and happening in Washington, D.C., from September 8th to the 10th. And I myself represent one of the organizing groups, having started Draft Bernie for a People's Party. Our objective being, we started in February as the coalition that Caroline mentioned. And so the objective there was to really harness this incredible energy that Bernie had had picked up, had created during the primaries, and since then, this progressive energy, this kind of progressive, amazing explosion into an independent party. It's funny that you mentioned Josh Fox. He was actually on our first organizing call and is a big supporter of ours. And so that is, for the past 6 months, we've been organizing exactly towards that, to try to impress upon Bernie that an incredible opportunity has opened up to create a new party that actually represents the American people on all of the different issues that neither of the major parties, the Democratic or the Republican parties, do. You know, those issues that are so characteristic from his platform of Medicare for all, free public college, breaking up the banks, getting big money out of politics, and so on. And so it is on in that spirit that we are organizing a conference in Washington, D.C., from September 8th to the 10th, where we are going to be discussing and strategizing how it is that that our movement can come together in building an independent people's party, a party that actually represents Americans on the issues that they say that they want.
Now, did you ever see, I was talking to your ally Carol about this, did you ever see the Yes Men who sent one of their comedic hijinks liberating team to a Democratic town hall meeting? Ostensibly, they were a representative of the DNC. Did you ever see this little public liberating skit?
No, I didn't.
Let me give you the gist of it, which was so he was accepted as a member of the DNC, and he addresses the town hall meeting, and he says what you just said. Now, as we know, we want Medicare for all, we want climate justice, we want, you know, sane whatever, and people were, and everybody in the Democratic town hall was like, absolutely, this is the Democratic Party we want, absolutely, you know, absolutely. And then at the end, it's revealed that it's not really, it's the Yes Men who do these liberating high pranks. So it's an interesting, you know, because right now Bernie's current strategy is hanging with the Democratic Party. That's your understanding of his current strategy, that you are relaxed and tolerant about that, right?
Right. That's what Bernie is trying to do right now, you know, and to us that feels like beating a dead horse. Bernie likes to be very thorough in what he does, you know, and so his effort is still, you know, believing that this party can be salvaged. And so we're trying to convince him that that he's done everything that he can to salvage the Democratic Party, and that really the country is at this point ready for an independent alternative, ready for a party that actually represents and inspires people very much in the way that his campaign did, and that we could revive that kind of energy and enthusiasm with an independent party. At this point, almost half of Americans call themselves independents, and only about a quarter of Americans call themselves Democrats and Republicans, respectively. And
with all due respect,
let's bring in Rob and climate crisis and the strategy of Standing Rock into play here. Yeah,
but with all due respect, has an independent third party candidate ever won historically? And the two party system in the United States doesn't really facilitate that. And just putting Bernie out there as an independent, wouldn't that drive more wedges into the Democratic Party, into a party that basically was assaulted in this last election, and then the loss was as a result of deep divisions that were exploited? Wouldn't that further that process?
Well, that's the thing, is that Bernie has an 80% favorability rating inside the Democratic Party, and he has something like a 70% favorability rating with independents, you know. Mm-hmm. And so what he's been trying to do for the past couple of years, really, is trying to bring together progressive Democrats and independents into the Democratic Party to form a coalition there that is capable of defeating the Republicans. We've now had a couple of years to see the results of that. You know, Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton, and ever since the general election, affiliation with the Democratic Party is declining. And so, you know, what we're saying is that the place to unite progressive Democrats and independents in an electoral coalition that is actually capable of defeating Republicans is in a new independent People's Party that actually stands for all of these issues that people want to see represented.
Well, and that is certainly worthy of considering. If we also use our story skill set, because, you know, part of what also happened is Hillary had no story craft, and Trump was the toxic con man of story. And Bernie, absolutely, you know, Bernie had story craft, education craft, you know, and as you say, we want to put up sails to catch that wind that was so authentic. So the Bernie dynamic, what I like to say is that, you know, he had what I call the magic mirror, which is all of us for effective story invitation hold up a secular mirror and go, look, you know, here's the problem, and we want to get to climate crisis as well. It sucks. And then with a wave of the hand, turns the mirror into a window. Here's what it could be. And then with another wave of the hand, turns it into a door. Let's go. And Bernie really has been the only one mainstream politician running for president, certainly, who had all of that. Here's the mirror. Here's the vision. Let's go. So what I was speaking to Rob about backstage is, you know, we want storycraft as the razzle-dazzle swindle for Trump voters begins to dissipate. Everyone wants to be invited into a story. And what was so positive about Standing Rock is it said this, you know, the leader said, this story is for you. If you're right-wing, you know, libertarian, it's about, you know, eminent domain. It's, you know, everything. And so are you also, and I do want to bring Rob in on climate change in a moment, but Nick, so do you feel that also part of your dedication is to for all of us to become better story crafters, you know, to invite, to extend the invitation, you know, come, here's what this could be, here's an invitation to a renaissance of reverent ingenuity that draws out the best of people, not the worst. Are you working on story crafting?
I think it's essential, and I think I agree with you that it is something that Bernie did so well, you know, and it's not enough. This gets kind of to Naomi Klein's thesis that it's not enough to say no. You know, we have to provide a palpable, attainable vision of an alternative, something very vivid that people can see, you know, that they crave in order to be effective. And at Draft Bernie and those of us who are planning the conference, we simply don't think that that can happen inside the Democratic Party, that, you know, people really now are craving some kind of new renewal, you know, not kind of attempts to tweak something existing that is already corrupted and putrid.
Okay, so I'm not a political operative, but I do have a few questions in that regard. What exactly in the Democratic Party is causing this, in your opinion?
Well, That's also part of our argument is, my job on the campaign, when I was with Bernie's campaign, I was the national political outreach coordinator. And so I was lobbying the superdelegates in favor of Bernie. And in that role, I got to see just how, entrenched the party is, in terms of its big money interest, in terms of, basically representing Wall Street over people. And that experience showed me that it is really much easier to start a new party, given
specific policies, though, are like Democratic policy, you know, party policies are representing Wall Street over people. I mean, you talk about it, and it's
sure,
a nice
absolutely.
Jingle, and we hear about this all the time, but I mean, what specifically? Because when I'm looking at the Republican Party versus the Democratic Party, I'm thinking there's black on one side and white on the other. It's night and day to me.
Right. Well, that's exactly part of what we're saying, is that there is a difference, of course, between the two parties, but the difference is not enough to be able to prevent, you know, 90% of income gains, as Bernie said on the campaign, from going to the top 1%. And so that's something that both major parties, you know, sign on to. That extreme inequality is something that both parties.
So senators like Elizabeth Warren sign on to that kind of thing? I honestly, I don't, I'm not really quite seeing it here.
This is part of your task, Nick. I'm sorry.
Exactly. People like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are very rare exceptions in the party. The character of the party as a whole is much more along the lines of what Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are, opposition to all of those things that Bernie ran on. They just released a platform in late July, the Democratic Party, where they once again rejected things like single payer health care, universal health care, and free public college. And so the Democratic Party, you know, consistently refuses to take those stances. And these are stances that polls show that the large majority of Americans are in favor of.
Is this historically more a result of the Clinton turn to the right in the 90s, do you think? Or is it just that the party itself, in your opinion, has become more corporatized in general after the debacle that was Citizens United?
It's both. Both of the parties have become more corporatized. Certainly, Bill Clinton represented a great turn to the right for the party as well. And so it's it's essential, I think, to recognize the role that the Democratic Party has played in moving the country to the right, right alongside the Republican Party. Because I think there's this misconception sometimes that it's the Republican Party that's pulling the country to the right, but it wouldn't be possible without the Democratic Party enabling that movement and following in lockstep to the right with the Republican Party. And so it's really the two parties that have both coordinated, and that's what Chomsky means, Noam Chomsky means, when he says that in this country, in the United States, we have essentially a one-party system with two wings, two right wings, the business party.
Right. Well, there is, you know, in that Chinese cliche, you know, crisis is danger and opportunity. Can we think also of from cataclysm comes sanity? You know, even out of all of the healthcare debacle, you know, that single payer may rise up again through all of this craziness. Just anecdotally, was telling Rob, I was at, you know, right wing cousin's wedding, very right wing Republican cousin of mine from Florida, rah, said, you know, last year I had a $90,000 heart operation and Medicare paid for all of it, and I'm completely for single payer and Medicare for all right now. I don't like Bernie, but I'm for Medicare, and, you know, and so we go, all right, anecdotal, you know, everybody wants a story, and I kind of view possibly what your dedication and your stalwart teammates, Nick, is, you know, also politics and campaign and conference as really what Bernie did as educational theater. I learned a lot from Bernie. He was so well prepared. He was so on it, you know, and that's why I want to kind of bring Rob in to and fro so that Rob doesn't have to just be like rah-rah, but contributing, you know, as we all define leadership. You know, and invite people into a discourse going, what is it we need now, given the huge catastrophe of Houston and globally? You know, and that's also certainly, you know, Bernie's concern with, you know, large global things and long-term thinking and that climate crisis is an issue. There's some other things, you know. Let me bring Rob in, and then we can keep toing and froing. But Rob, can you just? I know it's a huge thing, but bring in the need for leadership because of the global, as well as domestic nature of the cataclysm. Now that Bangladesh is one third underwater, right?
Yeah. So currently, what's going on in the climate is that we are seeing the more extreme weather events that scientists warned us about beginning to emerge. And right now, the whole equatorial region, well, pretty much the whole equatorial region of the world is experiencing very severe rainfall events. And this is in large part due to the warming of the ocean surface and the warming of the atmosphere, which considerably amplifies the most extreme rainfall events. Right now, during this time of year, the tropics are experiencing the monsoon, which is charging up the intertropical convergence zone. This is happening, something that happens every year. But this year, the monsoon is much more intense than normal, due to, in large part, to a warming atmosphere and a warming ocean surface. And in South Asia right now, there are 42 million people that are affected by flooding. Over 1,200 people have lost their lives as a result of this tragedy. And it is this same system, the same atmospheric system that helped to charge up Harvey, which has now produced the worst rainfall event from a tropical system for Texas and probably the U.S. since we began keeping records. And the science is pointing very strongly toward serious climate change-related influences on Harvey. Climate change, we can say unequivocally, made Harvey much worse. And we absolutely need political leaders that recognize the threat of global climate change, that help to provide clear policies that allow cities and states and nations to produce mitigating solutions for climate change, and also to prepare regions for the disasters that are to come that we have already locked in. And one of the reasons why I did support Bernie, despite my pointed questions earlier, is that he showed a level of visionary leadership that was lacking on the national scale and supported very clear, very strong, best-in-class climate policies that are going to result in reduced harm, lives saved, and in reduced economic damages. And these are things that, regardless of whether or not we are Democrat or Republican or independent, that we should all be concerned about. We should be concerned that China right now is taking leadership in renewable energy because of backward policies in the U.S. and
right.
because we failed to elect the right people. And I just want to say that I don't disagree with the things that you were saying there. It's just that I just want to be very clear. I don't want us to be in a situation where we're all fighting each other again and and all divided against each other, because we kind of got divided and conquered here in the last election. And that was hurtful for me to see. And I guess I'll just leave it at that.
Well, to toss it back to you, Nick, I mean, it is useful to, because we do want to craft, and we're all kind of toning, right, our crossing borders muscles to magnetize and invite the best out of everybody across all borders. So disagreements are useful. Many people, and Bernie at this point, feel that he's going to hang in to the Democratic Party. And you are, you know, come here. But at the very least, the conference that you're holding September 8th through 10th in Washington, D.C. at American University, is a forum for people to gather, you know, as we're doing in a micro way, to define what we're hiring, what leadership is, what we want, and how to be strategically effective, right?
Yes. And I think it's critical to recognize, too, that looking into our own history, and examining how does change happen. When you look at all of the major landmark achievements, you know, that kind of define our society as an advanced and civilized, a 21st century society, you know, things that we cherish and, you know, sometimes even take for granted today, things like a 40-hour work week, achievements like that, achievements like abolition, women's suffrage, achievements like like child labor laws, the direct election of senators as opposed to a patronage system, even the New Deal, all of these things were motivated by third parties that existed at the time, whether it was the Progressive Party, the Populist Party, the Free Soil Party, the Republican Party, which ended up replacing the Whigs, just like ours is an effort to replace the Democratic Party with a party that genuinely represents its base. And so looking back into our own history and thinking, how is it that all of these landmark achievements, you know, have been achieved? How did we arrive at them? There was always a major third party that was threatening to overcome an existing establishment party, one of the two parties, if it did not actually take a stand on that issue. And so now, reflecting on kind of where we stand as a progressive movement and thinking, gee, what is it, you know, how does our dynamic compare to back then? We lack the leverage that those third parties gave progressive movements, that external leverage, which has proven critical in our history in either forcing a major party to adopt progressive policies, things like actually dealing with climate change, Medicare for all, or when sometimes if the party refuses to actually come to the table on those things, replacing it outright. And so that's what we feel, looking back into our history, is the missing component. And that's why the Democratic Party feels so free to dismiss this progressive movement and can barrel on a progressive trajectory, a corporate trajectory, without really respecting progressives, is that we lack that leverage that the progressive movements of the past had.
Within the party, you mean?
The leverage is necessary without the party. And people have to have a choice. You know, the Democratic Party has to understand, in order to come to the table, when all of these major achievements were achieved, then it's necessary for the party, the existing establishment parties, the major parties, to know that voters have an option, that there is an alternative, and that if they do not come to the table, that in fact voters will have somewhere else to go. And that isn't, we don't have that kind of major third party right now, and therefore we lack that leverage.
So certainly, simultaneously, as a strategy for all of us, what Australia has, which is instant runoff voting, lest we have instant voter runoff, right, which is where you have a vote for number one and number two, which is what makes third party viable, right? Is that also part of our strategy to have the instant runoff voting?
Eventually, but first of all, but the major parties have, you know, throughout the decades, the centuries even, they have set up barriers to third parties like that, you know, like instant runoff voting, things like also eliminating fusion voting in a lot of states, and trying to keep third parties, independent parties out of the debate, for example, all of those things. But at this point, the two parties have moved so far to the right over the past few decades that the number of Americans who now identify as independents and who are now on the left kind of progressive populist side of the political spectrum in the U.S. is so enormous. It's an ocean of independents. You know, it's a party-sized chasm without representation that exists now. You know, and what Bernie showed is that when you actually run on those issues in an unabashed way, that's when you inspire a revolution.
So what about the primarying process? I mean, I know, for example, the Tea Party has been very effective in moving the Republican Party to the right by primarying through the Tea Party. Would this independent movement create a similar level of political objectives? Or, I mean, a lot of these statements are kind of broad, overreaching, but getting down to the nuts and bolts of it, if you want to move the party in a direct, in a progressive fashion, aren't you looking at producing more than just one? You know, I like Bernie, but don't we want to invite strong progressive candidates from all over, and also show, if the Democratic Party is moving in a corporate direction, don't we want a primary the corporate Democrats and hold them accountable against progressives? I mean, can't we do that also in the party as well?
That is the key question, is where is it that progressives should really invest their energy right now? And, you know, what is it easier to do? And people have been attempting to primary Democrats for a long time in that way. And the Democrats have, of course, erected all kinds of systems to prevent that as well. There's diminished turnout, of course, during the midterm elections, especially
maybe not
like closed primary to keep independents from voting.
If you use those issues, which appeal to so many people, then you're going to, doesn't it go to reason that you can try and change that dynamic?
Well, that is, you know, that's our thesis, is that it's easier to, at this point, start a new party because there is such a vast amount of people who are unrepresented by the major two parties than it is to try to go through all of those hoops that the Democratic Party has really created in an effort to primary and defeat those politicians there. I mean, what happens is that most people, when they don't know, when they go to the ballot box and they don't know a particular candidate, they vote down a party line. You know, they vote a letter, a D or an R. And at this point, polls show that actually most Americans believe that the Democratic Party is the party of the wealthy, that it is the party of the elite, as opposed to the Republican Party, you know? And so that shows the degree to which the Democratic Party brand has truly been destroyed among working people in this country. And the level of trust, the level of mistrust that they have of the Democratic Party. And so even when you run a candidate, you know, who runs on all of our issues, who runs as a Bernie-crat, people still, they are weighed down by the baggage that that D has on them, you know, because that's what people ascribe all of the baggage that the party has to those candidates. And
Hold on, team. And we're going to take a very, very short break. And Nick, can you hang with us 10 minutes after the break?
Of course.
Okay, excellent. This is the Visionary Activist Show. Our guests today are Nick Brana, Chief Catalyst for the Draft Bernie Movement, and Rob Fanny, a.k.a. Robert Scribbler. We'll be concentrating more on climate change after the break, but still, this is a good riptide. I'm Caroline Casey, and we'll be right back after this very short musical break.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chiny, 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 come blow my chiny home. Chiny, chiny, come blow my chiny home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our guests today are Nick Brana, Chief Catalyst for the Draft Bernie Movement and Conference, which is September 8th through 10th in Washington, D.C. That's draftbernie.org. And Rob Fanny, a.k.a. Robert Scribbler, who is among our most trustworthy climate crisis guides as we consider our effective responses to catastrophe. Yes, guiding political scientific strategy. So Rob, you were saying during the break, this is what defeated us, whatever the thing. No, but all of us, team, we do want to extend our range and repertoire of talking across borders, which is why it's useful. But you were feeling, Rob, saying to Nick and to many parts of our audience that the...
Well, I just think it is a false equivalency to say that the Democratic Party is the corporate party. I think that is completely untrue.
But he was saying that that's the public perception. I
understand that. Well, I don't agree that is the public perception, actually. I think that's a talking point that has been repeated over and over again, and that might be generating more perception than would otherwise be the case.
But I do want to get to 2018, as you said, as everybody kind of agrees that you were saying, well, people don't turn out in the midterms. I think this one will be quite different. You know, and the Republicans want to get rid of Trump and squish Pence in there as well. And let me just in the imaginative fantasy realm, Nick Brana, would you be triumphantly amused and happy if Bernie became president in any fashion?
Of course, I think so. Well, but if Bernie could win, if Bernie could have won in the Democratic Party, he would have done it already. He didn't. He didn't fail. You know, I was there on the campaign. He didn't fail to win out of a lack of support. It was because the party actually sabotaged his campaign.
That is true. I mean that is a true thing, that the Clinton shenanigans, all of those things. I mean, yeah. And when you were mentioning the 40-hour work week and child labor,
they would do it again.
Say what?
They would do it again too.
Yeah, it depends on. Yeah, it's true. The solid version of they, but it is. But we are kind of fluid. But I just wanted to say, you know, my dad was very old when I was born, but he was a New Deal congressman under FDR, and it was after he died that I found out that, you know, as you said, he was a supporter of fighting John La Follette, you know, the Prairie Populist, and so there is some dance between, I think, the point you were making of third parties giving rise to the progressive 40-hour work week. And you know, and people said that, you know, that FDR rescued America from communism by giving capitalism its last kind of chance there, you know, 40-hour work week and stuff. Rob is still not happy over here. He's because you're
I'm not a political guy. I mean,
we'll get to climate. We're going to get to climate.
I'm kind of a climate guy, but a lot of these things that I saw happen in the election were just did not sit well with me. And a lot of this, the way this conversation is going, is just as an observer, as someone that cares deeply about progressive values, I'm I don't really see how this generates a win for us if we break off Bernie into a third party candidate. If we had a strong third party, I agree. I think that could act as a gadfly that could actually organize and produce candidates that were strong challengers, strong progressive challengers at you know many levels. But just a single candidate, I love Bernie. I love his issues, and all these points about what happened leading up to the election are sound in that the Democratic Party created barriers. But I also think that it's kind of a little bit. I don't know how to say this nicely. I just think if we say, "Oh, the election was stolen from Bernie," that does not create the sense of unity that we need. I think that's kind of a divisive message, and I don't think that's 100% true. Even though obviously there were barriers placed there, and there was an unfair advantage that was created for the Hillary campaign.
And chicanery.
And yes, I'm not saying that didn't happen, but I mean, do we refight this battle?
Well, we have to confront it, because unless we confront it, it will happen again. We just got the motion in the DNC fraud lawsuit case, for example, was just dismissed, not on its merits, but, you know, on a grand of standing, so it'll be kicked up to a higher court. But for example, we have to confront these things just as we would confront, you know, criminal behavior, really, in any other sphere of society. Because when you don't, if we don't do that, then it will simply happen again.
So, but the use of the word criminal, I mean, is that appropriate? Because does this, in your opinion, rise to the level of criminality? And I mean, you're saying that Democrats are criminals? I mean, that's the kind of divisive language that I'm talking about.
Well, what I'm saying is that it's necessary to confront what the party did to stack the primary in Hillary Clinton's favor. You know,
okay, you're talking about process. I mean, that's completely different than criminality. So, I mean, when you start injecting these terms, you're painting the Democratic Party in this, you know, you're like this black brush. I mean, it's, I think, generally harmful because we are progressives. I mean, I am a progressive. I'm a proud Democrat. I voted for Bernie, and then I said, you know what? Look at those policies that Hillary has. They're a heck of a lot better than Donald Trump. I voted for Hillary, and I was not ashamed of it.
I don't
despite
know what
the
else.
Fact, mm-hmm. Despite the fact that there was a lot of chicanery, as happens with political campaigns. I mean, we're not a perfect snowflake, obviously. But you know what? We didn't pander to the Russians, which then hacked you know, the Republican Party. So, I mean, there's a whole context here that's just completely getting missed, in my opinion.
I think it's essential to confront exactly what was done and to recognize exactly what it is that we're talking about as well. I mean, what happened in the election is that's our democracy.
But
you know,
is
that's
Bernie
the bedrock
really
of what
this
country is built on. And
is,
so
is
the
Bernie
idea that, for example, that debates were purposely limited, the idea that debate questions were handed off specifically to Hillary Clinton as opposed to Bernie, you know, that we have to treat that as a stacking, as a rigging of our democratic process.
Rob's question is Bernie eager to relitigate this, or is his position yes and let's move on?
I think
it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
My apology.
I mean, yes. What? Yes. Which?
Bernie has not discussed it as much himself, but it is difficult to imagine. You know, how this is one of the challenges inside the Democratic Party is that how is it that progressives are supposed to win inside the Democratic Party when the party is, you know, with impunity allowed to favor one candidate over another? In open court, as a part of the DNC fraud lawsuit, the party said that it had no obligation to its voters, that it has the ability to pick, and I quote, its candidates in smoke-filled back rooms.
Right.
And really that the primary process is more of a facade than
anything. Conspiracy theory here.
Wait.
I'm sorry. It's just that it's pandering to this whole notion of conspiracy theory.
These are quotes in open court made by the DNC's defendant lawsuit, made by their defendants.
Yeah, so you're putting me, a climate expert, against someone that's schooled in all the language of this particular situation. I must say that my opinion differs greatly from this. I think this is a divisive angle, and my personal opinion is that Bernie himself has backed away from this for very good reasons. That independent groups went out and took this issue and used it as a wedge against the Democratic Party. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to see a strong, progressive, independent party. Is there? We have a huge, strong, progressive base in the Democratic Party itself. It's not just Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. I mean, there's a whole progressive caucus. And you know, isn't our energy better spent not relitigating the battles of the past? Certainly, we need to talk about Democratic Party process. I think that that's certainly a part of the healing process. But shouldn't Bernie be the person to address that and not an independent group that's supposedly talking for him? I mean, are we talking for Bernie here? I mean, and if we're doing that, then we're doing him a disservice.
Well, I think the purpose, the broader question is to speak about what's necessary for progressives to win. And at this point, the majority of the country wants a major independent party. And when you think of what kind of character of that party do they want, that's 57% of Americans, you know, according to Gallup. Only 37% of Americans don't believe that we need a major new party. Another poll, iCitizen poll, you know, puts it as high as 70% of Americans as wanting a major third party. And so, you know, it has reached a point where the majority of Americans don't have confidence in the existing two parties. And the question is, if we want to inspire the turnout in elections to be able to actually defeat Republicans, you know, then what is it that's going to do that? Is it trying to push people into a party which they're actively leaving, the Democratic Party? Or is it to rather follow the flow of those Americans, follow their lead into an independent alternative? And that's really one of the central questions, I think.
So we're going to segue, Nick, but it is clearly a worthy conversing, and you can just tell people also, how can they attend? Do they go to draftbernie.org if they want to attend this conference, September 8th through 10th, really quickly?
Please come visit us at convergence2017.org. And it will be a weekend full of panels and plenaries and receptions and discussions with progressive leaders about which direction we should take, you know, and it's an open discussion. That's what it's intended to be. And we will also be delivering a petition with 50,000 signatures on Friday to Bernie Sanders, asking him to start a new party. And so there's going to be a lot of, and on Saturday, we will have a town hall with myself, Cornel West, Shama Sawant, and Jimmy Dore to discuss this very question of where the progressive movement should go. Should we continue reforming the Democratic Party, those efforts, or should we embark on a different course, like starting a people's party rooted in all the progressive issues that we believe in?
Excellent. And my imploring, I guess, also is, you know, language that we just toss the word disappointed into the cauldron and ladle out so many other things, because disappointed means powerless in the underworld. Flummoxed, bamboozled, outraged, you know, creative, whatever. Anyway, thank you very much, Nick Brana. And go back to your worthy organizing, and let's keep the conversation going. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you so much, Caroline. And thank you, Rob. I've enjoyed the conversation.
That's good. Rob is biting his nails right now. Rob, let's go climate change.
I
would like to talk can we include Bernie in this conversation?
Oh, okay. Well, and also,
point.
All right. Well, actually, you're completely welcome to stay, Nick. And now we're just going to turn it over to so that Rob can unfurl into climate science, right?
And I would love to listen.
Okay,
please,
all right, let's do it then. Okay, let's go, Rob. There, okay, all these important points of that you are appropriately bringing up, Rob Fanny, also known as Robert Scribbler, who is among our most trustworthy climate crisis guides. And yes, I'm grateful to you for being here, even though you're, you know, which is important also. But let's, you know, have you guide. We're handing you the guiding stick at the moment, just in the sense of, you know, what is your definition of an informed, responsible leader, and what is what we said backstage is one of the most effective things for all of us, you know, is, you know, in inviting people to a coherent story is, did you know? You know, if we ask it of somebody without attitudinal snark, because people go, oh, no, I didn't know that. And you, Rob Fanny, Robert Scribbler, are a fountain of important things. Did you know that? How might you prime the pump of things that when we think about Houston and you've delineated some of it, and the poison and the factories exploding and the fires in British Columbia and the... where do you start with putting in their magic backpack, did you know that?
Well, so that's a lot of stuff.
It is a lot of stuff. Wherever you want to go.
I'll try and go with that. So a responsible leader, in my opinion, as far as, you know, climate change goes and as far as what's going on in Houston, would not just look at the microcosm of this disaster. He or she would look at the context of the disaster and recognize the fact that we're going to see more disasters of this kind more often for a number of different reasons. The seas are rising, so these hurricanes are going to be running in on a higher ramp. The rainfall events are becoming more intense. And the reason why that's happening is because we are continuing to burn fossil fuels and dump upwards of about 11 billion tons every year into the atmosphere. And the reason why we're doing that right now is because policies at every level of government in many ways favor fossil fuels over the alternatives. And have, you were talking about unlevel playing fields before. This is the the unlevel playing field from hell that we're talking about is the unlevel playing field between renewables and fossil fuels. Globally, more than $5 trillion every year goes to subsidize fossil fuels. So if you're looking at climate leadership, you're looking at someone who does not continue to add more fuel to the fire in the form of more subsidies for fossil fuels, as the Trump administration is now doing. You're looking at a leader that does not attack the EPA and put a big fossil fuel cheerleader in the form of Pruitt at the head of EPA. You're looking at a leader that tries to fast track both climate change mitigation, meaning reducing carbon emissions, and adaptation, meaning trying to make communities more resilient to the effects that are coming. And
which is partly infrastructure.
Yeah, it's all infrastructure in a lot of respects. It's basically deciding where we build things, where we protect infrastructure, how we manage water flows. Are we going to build walls like the Dutch do to try and fight the tide? Or are we going to – we need to talk about whether or not we're going to move communities inland as is already happening in places like Alaska. And not only that, just to even talk about climate change, we haven't had really a leader in this country that, except for Obama, over the past over the last 2 years of his administration, that actually really even addressed climate change as a key issue. And it's an issue that affects everyone at every level. So it's just you need a total change in the leadership. You need almost a 180-degree turn from what we have now in the form of Trump.
Right. And in that sense, you know, we're agreeing. It's like part of what we spoke about backstage, you know, and this includes Nick and his dedication as well, too, which is, you know, to put the desirable agreed story outcome, you know, on the table, as first, going the vision that you put there, and then going in the strategy about how we get there. There's one strategy, there's another strategy, okay, and respectful accord. And also what you're talking about is, you know, I mean, I understand it in the astro kind of mythic language, you know, we want to cultivate in ourselves and leadership vision and ingenuity. And what we were talking about backstage, Rob, also is risk. And we were talking about how one of the difficult issues with Hillary Clinton was playing it safe, which was actually quite dangerous and came to her demise on a number of levels. So the idea of intuitively guided risk and ingenuity as qualities that you think are desirable that we all cultivate, yes?
Absolutely. So I guess one of the things, and not to completely relitigate the last election, but I think one of the things that was against Hillary or not in favor of Hillary was general caution with regards to these issues. I mean, one of the things that I admired about Bernie was the fact that he spoke out about climate change very forcefully. And we need someone that can do that. We need someone that's not going to create space for fossil fuel special interests to come in and really change the game on this. And we need someone that's not afraid to talk about climate change in the context of these extreme events as they are occurring, which Bernie does do and is currently doing.
Yeah.
So we don't want someone that's in a defensive crouch. I mean, because, well, what we're looking at now is like in the media situation with regards to climate change, and we've been dealing with this for 40 years now, is that anyone that really sticks their neck out, it's almost like whack-a-mole. I mean, you stick your neck out, you talk out about climate change, and boom, the incoming, you know, information artillery starts firing off on you. But
with Bernie, it really did generate a chord, right?
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, the thing is that if you're talking about polls, you look at polls, most people in the United States agree that climate change is happening, that extreme events are getting worse. It's about 55% now, at least. A majority of the climate scientists, more than 97%, agree that humans are causing climate change and it's getting worse. And so if you're talking to people about climate change, you're going to, in my opinion, you're going to generate a positive response. And another one of those key issues is renewable energy. If you're talking about unifying Americans, 72% of Republicans support renewable energy. Their party doesn't. So that's a big opportunity for any kind of political figure, is to go out and forcefully promote renewable energy. There's really very little going against that.
And a playful agility, you know, it's sort of like who brought what, you know, who brought what to this renaissance, you know, and Nick's bringing his organizing skills, you're bringing a tremendous amount of dedicated knowledge and intriguing background, as you were saying, you know, from emerging threat assessment is a long-term dedication of yours, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, climate change is an emerging threat. It's in my opinion, one of the primary drivers, if not the primary driver, of geopolitical instability. If you look at Syria, for example, there are a number of climate change impacts that helped to produce that situation. The military refers to it as a threat multiplier. And if you're getting events that basically displace a lot of people, that destroy a lot of crops in a region, that destroy people's livelihoods, then you are producing more and more instability. Then you are producing crisis after crisis. And these things that we are seeing now in the political spectrum, fear of immigrants, fear of people taking what we have, that is in many ways driven by the wealth destruction process that we see ongoing in the world. So it's not as if these things are unrelated. Trump fed into a fear, a base of fear, that was already there, that was being cultivated by people who are afraid of others moving across the border. That's why his talk about the wall. We need to talk about things rather than focused on reacting, they're actually focused on solving the crisis, and the solutions are there. There was a report recently out in Nature that found that solar energy, the economics of solar energy were dramatically superior to fossil fuels, because every time you double the number of solar panels in the world, the price of solar goes down by 22%, and that creates an exponential advantage for that industry. You know, one of the things that we do talk about a lot as progressives is corporations and, you know, corporate influence. But there are some industries and corporations that I think that we really should be supporting, and those industries and corporations are involved in producing the solutions. And, you know, industries like Tesla, for example, and I know that, you know, there's some union issues, but industry, we want to be supporting industries that are supporting solutions to climate change. And we want to really get behind that. We don't want to just always be in the position of reacting or pointing out the negative.
No, right. Critique and vision. Yeah. And not reacting so much as responding, and crucial things just for us all before we deconvene. But, you know, tyranny feeds on fear, right? So we want to disrupt the fear cycle. When I did go to Cleveland as well as Philadelphia to the conventions, I started with the Trump people going, let's start with something we all agree about. You know, and I go, how about we all want to know how we're being conned? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. So to be conned and then liberated in some way. But on our way out, Nick, are you still there hanging in there? Oh, Nick has tiptoed away. Okay, but so what is,
no,
you know,
here. In, I'm here.
Oh, you're here. Oh, that's great. Is there anything, we're in the last minute-ish, you know, is there anything you'd like to ask Rob here?
Oh, well, I would like to ask, I mean, given the wanting to achieve the same things, you know, and given the urgency of what we have, do you think that it's something that that the Democratic Party is capable of achieving, given that even a figure as Obama, you know, was expanding offshore drilling and expanding kind of heralding natural gas?
It is. Yeah.
Well, you see, okay, so this is, in my opinion, the difference between, you know, pointing out little flaws and letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. I absolutely, Obama moved this nation forward by leaps and bounds when it comes to renewable energy and responses to climate change. He laid the groundwork or the policy groundwork for the advances that we are seeing in renewable energy now. His Sunshot initiative was amazing. And all of the things that we've lost now as a result of the loss of those underlying policies are putting our leadership in the world when it comes to renewable energy and climate change under threat. So all the little things that Obama didn't do, or all the various negative things with regards to fracking, didn't amount to a hill of beans when it came to the overall thrust of his administration. In supporting renewable energy and responses to climate change, his Clean Power Plan was an amazing policy. His advocacy of Paris was very important, very helpful. The increasing CAFE standards, and we could really just go on and on.
That's a worthy. I hope to keep the conversing going with both of you, together or not. Anyway, thank you very much, Nick Brenna, Chief Catalyst for the Draft Bernie Movement and Conference, draftbernie.org. And thank you very much, great Rob Fanny, a.k.a. Robert Scribbler. We'll have you back unfurling on your own as well. Thanks to Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. I'm Caroline Casey, and we will reconvene next week. Woof, woof. Thank you, team.
V Be sure to catch Apex Express on KPFA. Apex Express is a weekly program following news and cultural events throughout Asia and the Pacific Islands. Find out about issues affecting Asian American and Pacific Islander communities locally and globally. Get on board the Apex Express Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. on KPFA.
The cost of independence is responsibility. KPFA's mission is to speak the truth to power and extend our platform to voices that never get heard in the mass media noise. Help keep us vigilant. You can donate online at any time at kpfa.org or during our fall fund drive. The cost of independence may be high, yet never so high as the loss of it. Thank you for your generosity.